Space Cowboy Books presents Simultaneous Times, a science and speculative fiction podcast. Short stories to stir the imagination by contemporary authors.
Welcome to the 3-year anniversary episode of Simultaneous Times podcast. To celebrate, we've teamed up with editor J.W. Stebner to bring you stories from the pages of Hexagon Speculative Fiction Magazine. The Minute by Joshua Green, from Hexagon Magazine, issue number 3, with music by Red, Blue, Black, Silver. Is this the one you want? The technician spins around from his computer with Tim's retina recorder in hand. He plays the video on the television one more time so Tim can see. Yes, he smiles. A monitor beeps to his left as he watches himself embrace his late wife. He remembers that moment, often plays it in his own head. And I won't remember when it repeats? No, said the technician. He sounds confident enough. We have a dedicated care team that will monitor your uploaded activity, up to 100 days before you're put into our secure vault. We are fully staffed at all hours, and we will monitor this one-minute video 144,000 times. He pauses and spins back towards the computer. If we find any sort of anomaly, we will terminate everything immediately. His lungs ache as he inhales to speak, and his eyes hurt from the recent surgery. The white walls around him spin from the lack of oxygen. He's old and in pain, his body skinny and frail. Finally, he says, "And what if I'm okay with this anomaly you're talking about? I don't want to get shut off." "Against company policy, sir." The technician turns and removes his glasses before letting out a sigh. "We asked for you to give us the video so that everything is controlled. If something glitches, we would hate for you to suffer." He stops and looks to the ceiling, trying to find the words. "Let me put it this way. For us, it's an issue of ethics. Since you're living 1 minute an infinite amount of times, we better make sure it's exactly the one you want. A glitch could be catastrophic for your experience." "Makes sense," Tim says. He closes his eyes and tries to imagine himself as a young man. It's difficult with all the tubes inside keeping him alive. His breathing is labored, shallow, wet. He badly wants to see his wife again, even if it won't really be her. "What do you want me to do?" The light tapping of keys cuts through the silence. "I need to ask you a few questions. Is that all right?" "Perfectly fine," Tim says. "Can you give me your full name?" "Timothy Ray Garcia." "Perfect," says the technician. "And your late wife's name?" "Janelle Lee Garcia." "Wonderful," the technician says. "Near perfect coactivation between the hippocampus and the ventral striatum." "What does that mean?" Tim can't see the technician smiling. "It means you loved your wife a whole lot. Still do. It also decreases the chances of an anomaly. The subconscious part of you wants to see her again." "Oh?" Tim says. He's surprised the technician can read that sort of thing on a computer. "Now what?" "Now I want to see you think a bit about you and her together. Do you remember the first time you both met?" Tim smiles. "Of course. Vividly." Blurred images come to mind. A rustic coffee shop. Sunny skies. He remembers how they had their first kiss that night, outside the door of her apartment. "Good." He flips on other monitors and begins moving about the room, checking machines. "Now, this might be a strange experience for you. Have you ever meditated?" "Not really," Tim says. "I was busy in retirement." No problem. A moment later, the technician is hovering over him, checking wires and tubes. Just focus on your breathing. Let yourself daydream. Start from the beginning. Work your way methodically in and out of that specific time. Maybe start a moment or two before you first saw her. I can't remember what we talked about. Tim is surprised at how much that pains him. His heart suffers a cold rush of failed nostalgia. I don't remember at all. Of course you don't. The technician sits down again before clicking away. What you remember most is how you felt. The rest is a broken slideshow. He stops and turns, looking Tim in the eyes. Again, I just need to be able to see that we can recreate what you're thinking. It helps when reconstructing experience. Not everyone's a perfect candidate for what we offer. How well you're able to recreate a moment in your mind, and how well your subconscious is able to fill in the gaps, will tell us if you're a good fit. We're not simply inserting you into a pre-recorded video. We're reconstructing every aspect of your consciousness so that you experience that video. Tim takes a long, worn breath. He wants to be done with this. He wants to be done thinking. He just wants to see her again. So you want me to just think about when we met? Yes, he says. Play it like a movie in your mind. Close your eyes. Tim settles back into the bed and closes his eyes. It's difficult at first, but soon enough, the images come. He doesn't realize he's smiling. Here you go, sir. I looked up to see a petite-looking woman holding out a small to-go cup. What's this? I asked. I didn't order anything. The woman smiled and pointed to a table at the other end of the shop. That lady with the braid and the maroon jacket wanted me to give this to you. I looked across the room and couldn't help but smile. I thought this only happened in bars. The worker laughed and set the cup on the table. Well, now it happens here too. Do you know her name? I asked. It's Janelle. She's a regular. Ah, is she single? She laughed. I would hope so. Yeah, me too. Thanks. I barely noticed the worker as she left to wash the table beside me. My heart was pumping far too fast. I felt dizzy, and yet somehow I managed to stand and grab the coffee before making my way to the other end of the room. All around me, people chatted, slapping laptop keys, playing games, talking with old friends and new acquaintances. My mind, however, was solely focused on the woman in the brown chair who was so obviously pretending not to look my direction. Thanks for the coffee, I said when I was close enough. It wasn't witty, definitely not funny. I honestly didn't know what to say. Janelle looked up and slowly batted her eyes. They were a beautiful dark hazel. I thought I saw a tinge of green as well. I didn't buy you that coffee. My heart locked, every part of me immovable as stone. I looked around to see if maybe I was pointed to the wrong girl. Oh, I started to say. I thought, I'm sorry. She was already laughing by the time my eyes were back on hers. I'm joking, she said. I'm Janelle. I know, I said. Do you? And how's that? Her tone was playful. Mine was entirely too matter-of-fact. The lady who gave me this told me. Did she? I caught her eye wander over in her direction. They were both smiling. Yes. Well, are you going to sit down so we can get to know each other? I was surprised, then, at how my heart relaxed. In the span of a moment, she had gained my trust and affection. I would love nothing more. The whir of machines cut through his reverie. Your wife sounds funny. Tim opens his eyes and watches as a window on the monitor disappears. It takes him a moment to realize he's being spoken to. She was hilarious, he says. He remembers the long walk they went on after, caffeine running through their veins as the Saturday morning sun hugged the tops of the trees. Did it work? More than enough, he says. Hang tight while I send the information over to another department. A couple minutes go by. He feels the silence echo around in his heart, bouncing off every empty wall, like a condemned house with peeling plaster. He wishes she were here with him in this moment, just as he had been for her. He thinks of Janelle and how she's locked in the cold, dark server room, living out the same minute over and over again. The one desire of her heart being perpetually filled. He is just moments away from this same awful fate. He looks outside and strains his eyes a bit. It's a bright day. He sees a young couple pushing a stroller while their young daughter silly dances on the sidewalk in front of them. He smiles. What are you remembering? Huh? Tim shuffles up in his bed the best he can to get a better look at the technician. He's typing away while glancing at a monitor to the right. The areas in your brain that I mentioned before? They're lighting up. Oh? Tim said. I saw a young couple outside with their kids. Made me think of my own. It sounds like you've lived a good life, Mr. Garcia. I can tell you loved your kids a lot. Tim gives the technician a puzzled look, though he can't quite see. And how would you know that just by reading the computer? The technician turns in his chair and puts one leg over his knee. The medial orbitofrontal cortex mediates the feelings of remorse. The strong coactivation between the hippocampus and the ventral striatum I just witnessed suggests that you loved your kids a lot and that you're glad you had them. I do love them, Tim says. Not sure I like the feeling I'm getting now, though. Nostalgia, you mean? Asks the technician. He sighs and looks back at his computer. I know what you mean. The brain is a funny thing, Mr. Garcia. It's able to take a specific memory and attach a reward value to that memory. The feeling we get from this combination is that of nostalgia. He pauses. Though it is strange that we often don't feel rewarded by the nostalgic. Tim doesn't respond. Instead, he looks outside. The family is long gone, and despite all the nostalgia crammed inside his dying body, he tries to be thankful that he was able to experience the good of raising children. He thinks he would do it all over again if he could. Do you think your company will ever allow someone to relive longer than just a minute? Oh, absolutely, says the technician. He doesn't miss a beat. In fact, it's our goal. It's just that the technology isn't there yet. Would you be able to condense all the footage of my life into 1 minute? The technician laughs. I've been asked that before. It's technically possible. Illegal, though. Illegal? Why? He coughs as he says this. It's thick and wet. He can feel his body beginning to shut down. He tries not to think of his faux afterlife. Not yet. The Crimes After Death Act, or CADA, prohibits it. Since we don't have the resources to sift through every second of your retina device, we can't be certain that you didn't commit some sort of crime. We're not allowed to let people relive their terrible acts. Even though the person in the driver's seat is the only one conscious? Tim furrows his brow at this. Congress has always been 50 years behind technology. The public wasn't into it either. Activists that wanted us shut down were able to spin that into a law. Not even my Janelle will be really conscious when I see her again. It will just be like watching a video, she'll just be an image. These words grate against his soul. Tears form around the whites of his eyes. You won't know that once you're in there, Mr. Garcia. The technician turns around and moves to the bed, checking once more over the wires. I'm going to need you to do some remembering now. Can you do that for me? Sure, Tim says. He tries to compose himself. He almost fails. What now? Access a memory of your children, something that hasn't ever quite left you. Do the same as before. Work your way into it. Allow your mind to fill in the gaps. Doesn't matter if it's right. Okay, Tim says. He lays his head back and closes his eyes. He's surprised at how many memories there are for him to choose. Ready? He hears the technician move back to his computer. Ready? He leans back and allows the first memory to come to him like a child running to see his father after a long day at work. I felt the punch to my arm before I heard the cry. Can you get him? Janelle asked. She turned back over. It was a command, not a question. Does he need to eat? He ate 20 minutes ago, she mumbled. He just wants to be held. I staggered to my feet, mind numb, eyes heavy and worthless. The soft yellow of the nightlight just before the bassinet revealed a scrunched and angry face. I watched his small, thin lips as he quivered for care. I was terrified of dropping him, so I shook out my hands before reaching into the bassinet. There, there, I said, my fingers gently moving under his tiny head. My other hand lifted from his butt as I brought him close to my chest. He stopped crying after he felt my warmth. I watched as he yawned himself back to sleep. Using my knees, I bounced up and down softly. I didn't really know what to do with him other than just look and wonder and bounce. I wondered what he would be like someday. I wondered what he would look like and who he would love, or if he would love anyone at all. I thought about all the little quirks I had so quickly learned to love. His strength in the way he could break his right arm from his onesie in order to put his thumb in his mouth. His desire for the presence of others by his incessant cries in the middle of the night. Even the way his eyes tried to focus on mine made me at a loss for words. I don't know how long went by, perhaps a moment or an hour. Though when I was sure that he was asleep, I gently placed him back into his bassinet and crawled back into bed. Thank you. She was still awake. Of course, I said, placing my arm over her belly. I'm surprised you remember that, says the technician. Tim opens his eyes with a heavy, aching heart. For some reason, it stuck with me my whole life. Was he here first? He's typing again, probably sending more information. He was. I think I remember that so vividly because it was our first night home. I'd never held a newborn alone like that before. You're right, the technician says. Our brains hold first-time experiences, much like how bookmarks hold a page for us. That's a lot of bookmarks, Tim says. The technician stops and turns before taking off his glasses, twirling them around in his hand. For some, yes. He's staring at the floor now. Tim doesn't understand why. He wishes he were hooked up to the machine. Are we done? He says this to break the technician out of his strange trance. Just about, he says, looking up. I just need one more. I apologize in advance for what it is. What's that? Tim asks. I need you to think about the last time you saw your wife. I need you to think about what that felt like, same as before. Why? He coughs, anger riding along the edge of his voice. He doesn't mind nostalgia, but thinking about his wife like that on his deathbed would be torturous. I don't want to do that. Twice isn't enough for our science, the technician says. We've nailed it down to three or four. I'm only asking you to do three. We just need to see that coactivation one last time. It needs to be strong, though. Fine, Tim says. He's not interested in fighting. The man in front of him holds the keys to his afterlife, after all. He closes his eyes and feels his body weaken. It's giving up, and he knows he doesn't have much time left. He uses this to conjure thoughts of his wife lying in bed, old and sick, unable to see anything at all. I stepped into the room with a small bouquet in my hands. The vase beside the bed was empty of flowers, full of water. "How are you feeling?" I asked. Janelle looked my way with white hair and glossy eyes. "I feel sick," she said. "You brought plants?" "I did." I stepped forward with a smile as the sun from the window beyond blinded me. Kneeling beside the bed, I reached forward so that the petals could tickle her nose. She laughed and swatted them away playfully. "You're always bugging me. Stop bugging me." "I can't," I said. I looked over at the technician in the corner. Her hair was pulled tight into a bun. "Is everything working?" "Just about," the technician said. "Are you sure this is the minute you want to live?" I looked to Janelle. "Are you asking him or me?" She winked at me and smiled. "You, Janelle," said the technician. "I just want to be sure." "Yes, I'm sure." A moment later, the technician rose from her desk and said, "Then it's time. I'll give you two a moment to say goodbye." I watched as she left the room, closing the door behind her. We spoke of our deep love for one another. I thanked her for fun, friendship, and the way she snorted when she laughed. We exchanged unneeded apologies for forgotten words and forgotten fights. My heart ached watching her eyes grope hopelessly for the sight of my face. I wanted her to see me again as an old man full of love. I gently rubbed her hand and sang soft songs under soft, warm sunlight. She smiled as she always did. I cried like a child. She died in my arms an hour later, slipping quietly into the corporate machine. Tim opens his eyes. They're wet, and his heart is in his throat. A deep longing grips him despite knowing that he will see her face again. It won't truly be her, and he hates that it will fool him so. "Thank you," the technician says. "I know that must have been difficult." Tim doesn't want the kind words. He wants to be done. "Are we ready?" "Just give me another moment, waiting for confirmation." He rises and walks over to the bed for the last time. "Say, do you mind if I ask you a personal question?" "Sure," Tim says. "That's fine. What does it matter?" The technician pauses, as if he can't quite think of the words to say. Finally, he asks, "Why did you choose the minute you did?" "What's wrong with what I chose?" "Nothing," he says. He takes a step back to inspect every wire from a distance. Then he strokes the scruff on his face, obviously deep in thought. "It's just that most people choose something monumentous, like the tail end of a great sexual experience or their wedding day. I've even had some adrenaline junkies choose to relive their first time parachuting." Tim smiles and closes his eyes. She chose the same minute. The technician considers this for a moment before moving back to his desk. Tim can hear him clicking around the monitors. A moment later, he asks, "Are you ready?" A pause hangs in the air between them as he says goodbye to every bookmarked memory he can find, every love he's ever felt, every image of her he can conjure. After a minute or so of this, he says, "Ready." A moment later, he slips silently into the machine, where he will remain alone forever. He slams the car door shut, his eyes working through the busy crowd of people coming and going. "She said gate 3," he thinks. It takes everything in him to stay by the car. He hasn't seen her in months. 97 days to be exact, he's been counting. Being apart while Janelle took care of her mother had been agonizing for both of them. He works his way over to the passenger door to try and get a better look.
"You need to move along, sir."
Tim turns around and finds a police officer looking at him. "She's on her way out right now." He says this before turning around, whispering, "Come on, Janelle, let's go." His heart pumps with excitement. He's sure hers is too. A moment later, he sees her standing at the door, looking around with equal expectation. "Janelle," he says, waving his hands in the air. Their eyes meet and his heart gladdens at her smile. She runs towards him in her heels, dragging a large black suitcase behind her. When she's close enough, she jumps into his arms. "I missed you," Tim says, holding her tight. "I missed you so much." The longing he once felt disappears in her presence. "I missed you too," she says. "I'm so glad to be home." Cold Storage by Nicholas C. Smith. From Hexagon Magazine, issue number 1, with music by Fog Machine. Laya split open another dry pea husk, a mold green coffin, 3 shriveled up bodies inside. The ruined peas fell from the pod and spattered like ash on the metal floor. She reached a finger to her cheek to see if she was crying, starvation's sharp knife having whittled away her senses. The spacecraft carried just 4 living people, Laya and her triplets, only 4 months, and yet, somehow, she couldn't fill them. Failing. Failing as a mother and as a provider. Around her, warm lights shone on glass cribs filled with soil. They cradled death. Carrots, potatoes, lettuces, peas, and parsnips. All blight brown, a breath away from dust. She tried to save them. Moved everything away from the plant nursery, where the blight had run rampant, and into this sterilized storage room. Harvested seeds from the few specimens that hadn't been infected. Used new cribs, monitored power and heat levels. But the blight was as relentless as her own hunger. Always followed, always caught. 90% of the peas were dead. It hit the other vegetables harder. Laya let the empty pea pod fall from her palm. "They'll die unless you do something. A good mother would find a way." "Mom?" Juniper stood in the doorway, dressed in a knitted bunny nightie. Laya pinched her sweaty t-shirt away from her ribs, then turned and forced a plastic smile. "Well, hey there, sweetie. Nice of you to visit your old mother." "They're dead, aren't they?" It took a moment to understand. The vegetables. That's all she meant. Dead vegetables. The girl eyed the room. "How much is still good?" No point lying. She might only be 10, but Juniper knew more about plants than Laya ever had. "Mom, how much survived?" "Not enough." She rubbed her head. Shouldn't say such dark things to her baby. A mother should be a flame protecting her children from cold and darkness. "Don't let your smile drop." "But we'll find a way." Juniper walked over and rubbed Laya's arm, as sinewy as the pea pods that littered the floor. "It'll be okay, Mom." Her daughter watched her, assessing. Laya slowly puffed out the hollows of her cheeks. You can't keep giving us your food.
Oh, okay then. I'll just let all my babies wither away.
I'm not giving you my food, honey. You never eat with us anymore. They both knew why. Laya sighed. It might as well be now.
I need to talk to you. To your sisters, too.
They're with Dad.
Then that's where we're going.
Juniper smiled, somehow. Like an alchemist, she took Laya's darkness and spun gold onto her lips. Laya touched her own mouth on the way out of the room to check her smile. Still there. The girls spent as much time here in the cryo bay as they did in their bedroom. They played amongst the steel walls and ran along the metal mesh rows lined by frozen corpses. Almost 100 cryo units, most filled. Frozen bodies that would never thaw. This graveyard was the girls' garden. Laya hated it. Hated the warped faces of those who'd abandon her. Juniper ran ahead to her sisters, to the steel and glass capsule that contained their father.
Hi, Daddy.
Juniper leaned down and kissed the glass.
Mommy, look what Iris made,
said Lily. Iris held up her painting. Three little girls beneath purple skies, outside a jagged, geometric house. A man and a woman holding hands.
That's you and Daddy.
She squinted. Is my hair gray?
I thought of that,
said Lily, beaming. Because you'll be much older when we arrive and he wakes.
He won't wake. None of them will.
It's lovely. Iris pressed the painting against the glass coffin. Her father, like the rest of the crew, had taken his chances in cryo rather than starving to death after the blight took the food supplies. He'd abandoned a pregnant Laya for the ship's last resort. Pods that couldn't be thawed safely. Not with current technology. Maybe never. Laya had struggled on alone, refusing to freeze her unborn babies.
Dad's seen it enough, said Iris. He's probably bored of it.
He hadn't seen it at all. Never would. But little white lies kept her children going.
Mommy wants to talk to us, said Juniper sharply. It's serious. The new plants are dying.
The girls turned to face Laya.
Is that true, Mommy? Lily asked. The plants are dying?
Not all of them, but yes, many are.
Too many for us to stay alive? Said Juniper.
Yes. The word came on a sharp in-breath, a gasp. Iris was crying. She always cried so easily. The youngest triplet in every way. Laya took a deep breath. In 2 days, I'll be joining your father in stasis.
What? You can't.
I am, she replied. We're not harvesting enough food. Lily wrapped her arms around herself.
But then you can't wake up until we reach the colony. 22 years,
said Juniper. The white light ate at her as much as the hunger. She might never wake. The technology wasn't waiting at the colony. It didn't exist. It'll go in a flash. I'll take the pod right next to your dad, and you'll read to us every day, paint us pictures. We'll still be able to see and hear everything.
Juniper said, It's a mistake, Mom. We should be the ones to freeze. There's plenty enough food for one, and you know how to keep the ship working.
Laya bit her lip.
It'll be me sleeping, no arguments. Three people can maintain the ship better than one. And besides, you're already better with the plants than I am, Juniper. You've read so many texts about them. Plus, they love your singing. Keeps the blight away.
Juniper's expression finally changed. The steel frame melted, and, for a moment, she looked her age, as young as her sisters.
Please don't leave us, Mommy, said Lily.
There's no choice, and there's no arguing with me.
Juniper's face set hard again.
We'll do whatever you say, Mom.
That's my girl. My girls.
I'll make sure they're okay, said Juniper.
Had Lya ever been more proud? Juniper inherited a Sisyphean burden by being born minutes before her sisters, but she kept pushing the boulder upwards, no matter how steep the incline.
Thank you, Lya mouthed to Juniper.
She opened her arms and her girls flooded to her. Lya hugged them tight into her bony chest, but couldn't feel their heat.
I love you all so much, more than the moon, and I'll see you again when we arrive.
She kissed their heads.
22 years, said Iris.
It'll go by in a flash, Lya said. Tomorrow, I'll take you through the chores that'll need doing and the maintenance that'll need running. And then, the day after, we'll have the most amazing going away party. I promise.
Lya led the girls through the ship's bowels. She showed them how to sanitize the water recycling unit and how to clean the air filters. Then later, in the kitchen, taught them 3 ways to cook potatoes to keep them interesting. The promise of the party tomorrow stopped their spirits from falling entirely. And when her own soul flagged, Lya hugged her nearest child, savored the scent of their hair and the music of their smiles. Even if the lies had been true, if sleepers could be woken, she'd still miss the end of their childhoods, their metamorphosis. Innocent cocoons releasing butterflies, unique patterns on each's wings. Iris yawned, then Lily. Juniper struggled against her own.
Okay, bed, all of you,
said Lya, as if it was just another night, another sunset on a planet the kids had never seen.
It's been a long day, and you're all exhausted.
They complained, of course. She wanted to surrender to them, desperately, but she was a good mother, strong, had to be.
Bed, she repeated, sterner. Then tomorrow we'll have so much fun.
Juniper turned and nodded at her sisters, surreptitious and slight, but Lya saw it. Lily and Iris said goodnight and left.
And why aren't you going with them?
We can't do it without you, Mom, answered Juniper. We need you.
Ah, so Juniper was the designated negotiator.
You can, and will, she paused. And your sisters will still have you to look after them.
Mom,
Juniper stared down at her hands.
What is it?
We'll have enough food for a while, but not once we're all adults. Not enough plants are surviving. There won't be enough calories for 3 adults. We're not stupid.
The ball of anxiety ever present in Lya's throat began to thicken, air struggling to flow past.
If you can keep up the yields where they are, you won't need much more when you're 18 than you do now.
And if the blight gets worse?
If it gets worse, Juniper, sweetie. Oh, then you'll just have to starve to death, and it'll be painful and terrible. And it'll all be because of your awful mother.
Air finally reached her lungs.
It won't. You won't let it.
Juniper winced. God, she'd kill her daughter with the pressure. Juniper was just a fucking child.
I'm sorry.
It's fine.
Come on, we're both tired. Go to bed. I've got a few last things to do here.
There's no party tomorrow.
Lya paused. Was that a question or an accusation? For all the promises she'd made, the broken truths she'd glued back together, she couldn't find a way to keep this one whole.
No.
You're going tonight, aren't you?
Salt found the corners of her mouth. How were they so smart?
I have to. Can't say goodbye.
I can't.
Juniper wrapped her arms around her mother's neck and kissed her cheek.
We love you, Mom.
Just read to me, please.
Every day.
She nodded. If they read to her, if they believed she'd come back, they'd have another reason to go on, to struggle, to survive. Juniper climbed down and took a last long look at her mother.
We'll be okay, Mom. I promise.
Lia walked the corridor, back as straight as she could make it. Her final duty as a mother. Every breath up to her last would be for her girls. She paused outside their room. Silence. All fast asleep behind the metal door. Lia walked onto the lift and began her descent. Guilt and fear sailed circles in her head and cast nets down to the bile in her stomach. The lift doors opened and she entered the graveyard. Something was wrong. Green lights flashed where they should be red. Three frozen coffins in a row. Lids closed where they had earlier been open. Her babies. Lia screamed until her throat pained, her cries grinding it raw like sandpaper. Through the frozen glass, she saw their little warped faces, different now. Now their blood had been thinned and chemicals poured in. Now crystals of ice smudged the glassy surface. Now their skin was shriveled and brown. Three dead peas. The note pinned to their father's unit was an iris's scrawl. They'd all agreed the food would be too little for three adults, that Mom was the only one who really knew how to run the ship. Had kept it going by herself for years already. But they knew Mom wouldn't agree, so they were secretive and sorry. But it was going to be okay. They'd still hear her stories, so she was to read to them. And to Dad, every single day. That they loved her dearly, more than the moon. And they'd see her again when they arrived. Lia lay weeping on the mesh floor. What had they done? What had she done? Little white lies had piled up until they were as heavy as 6 feet of soil. She thought of the food. Enough of it now. For her. She thought of life going on, alone, without them. She thought of the final open cryo bed on the same row as her children. She thought of never waking, of maybe one day waking. Finally, as the cold took her, she thought only of her baby's faces. In this episode of Simultaneous Times, you heard The Minute by Joshua Green, with music by Red Blue Black Silver, and Cold Storage by Nicholas C. Smith, with music by Fog Machine. Both stories from the pages of Hexagon Speculative Fiction magazine. We would like to thank the authors and Hexagon's editor, J.W. Stebner, for making this episode possible. Hexagon Speculative Fiction magazine is a wonderful and free online speculative fiction publication out of Canada. Find out more at hexagonmagazine.ca. We would also like to thank all of the authors, voice actors, and composers that have made Simultaneous Times possible. And a special shout out to Fog Machine and Red Blue Black Silver for all of their wonderful music over the years. Find us on Twitter and Instagram, and check out our online store at bookshop.org/shop/spacecowboybooks. And thanks for listening.